Welcome everyone to another podcast of Modern World Zen. This is Josh Barzell. So last episode we tried a new audio stream and it works. I think it works a lot better, and you can tell me if you like the other one, but I think this is going to be a little bit better because it eliminates the background sound. So last episode we were talking about how we really need to have a healthy awareness in the world that we get from our meditation practice. And I was just this comes naturally to a meditator. It's not as if that you need to talk about it so much, because when you meditate, you find consciousness. And then when you come out of meditation, it's there waiting for you in the world with all of your relationships and obligations. But we took some time to talk about what that would look like, about seeing consciousness in things that we used to think as negative, as antagonistic. In other words, the best thing I wouldn't say the best thing to do, but the thing that we do that's essentially the worst thing that we do, and I'll explain what I mean, is we see, I guess the best point I'm going to make is that we see someone as bad when they're actually consciousness. So let me say that again. We see a certain circumstance or a person that's behind that circumstance as bad when they're really consciousness. Perfect example of that is Donald Trump. So Donald Trump, we could see as bad if you're a Democrat, but Donald Trump is consciousness. There is no Donald Trump. It's just consciousness. And you can use that for any of your relationships that you find questionable. It's not hard if you like Donald Trump. If you like Donald Trump, it's great. But it's only in those circumstances where it's troubling for you. And say for a Republican, what happens? Well, you see a Democrat and you say, this is bad, right? Well, there is no Democrat. It's just consciousness. So, right? So that's how we should look at it. And that's what we kind of talked about last episode. So in this episode, we're going to go into that a little bit more deeper. And we're going to understand that the reason everything is consciousness is because our perceiving mechanism is consciousness. You know, when you see an image, that image is made of consciousness, because that's how we create it from our brains and our perception. So it's not really science fiction or some leap of faith to say that, you know, these things are consciousness. They really are, philosophically so. And that's how we can use the philosophy along with science to get to where we need to get in our meditation practice. So the idea is that if you're living in the world and you're only seeing consciousness, do you need to meditate? The answer is actually no. You don't need to meditate in that context, but none of us are there. So we do need to practice, but that's kind of the goal that we're trying to get to. And then the idea is that with that goal, you're going to understand the nature of the mind and how it works for you, say now being enlightened versus how it used to work when you were ignorant and in the state of bondage. And it's really just a matter of how the mind is turned. If the mind is turned outward, we take the form of whatever it is that we're looking at. If the mind, and that's why it's so bad to think of things as bad, because you can imagine, let's take a Democrat looking at Trump. So now the Democrat is looking at Trump and saying that's bad. That Democrat just became bad, basically, because they're meditating on bad. Or if you take a Republican who's looking at a Democrat, right, and saying, that's bad, well, now they've become bad in that moment, right? Whatever you're meditating on, you become like. So you can see why that is negative. Now, what happens in the state of enlightenment is that the mind turns within and focuses on consciousness. So it doesn't even focus on anything external. It's just focusing on the self or consciousness or God. And in that way, you become like God, or you become like consciousness, which is way better than the alternative, right? can imagine, and you can think about any of these times where you've had antagonistic, you'd have a hostile or antagonistic situation or hostile treatment, and you can immediately see that you became bad in that moment. And you probably had consequences of being bad in that moment because your mind took on that characteristic. So it's very bad. And if you've gotten in trouble from it, I'm sorry, but let's put all that behind us and not to have that happen ever again. And that requires a really strong meditation practice to be able to not get into those traps. The other aspect of the difference between an enlightened mind and an ignorant mind, say, or not, unenlightened, or a not free individual, if you will. I mean, because the reality is we're all free. We just don't know it. We don't have the awareness of it. But the aspect of the normal mind versus the enlightened mind is that the mind doesn't become pure energy. The mind stays separate from the self. So all of our anxiety is a result of being separated from the inner consciousness. So as soon as we become one with the inner consciousness, our anxiety goes away. We're able to sleep. We feel relaxed. We have a general sense of well-being, serenity, composure. But in reality, for the enlightened mind, the mind is consciousness. In other words, the mind is consciousness regardless of whether you're in the enlightened state or whether you're in the state of bondage, say, the non-liberated state. But in the enlightened state, we recognize it as being pure energy. We have the experience of the mind being pure consciousness. And so that's another idea that we should look at. And then what happens is the scriptures call that the death of the mind, right? Because as soon as you see the mind as pure energy, there is no mind. You can't point to anything and say, oh, there is my mind. And the problem is we think of that as losing the mind. No, we haven't become crazy in that state. That's a different state, right? Where you have no self-control. When the mind is pure energy, and if that's your experience as having it being pure consciousness, you're in complete control. You're in complete control of your mind. You're in complete control of your body. You're in control of your thoughts. You don't even let your thoughts get out of control, right? But the state of someone losing their mind in that expression is a state of total chaos where the person has no control over what they're doing. We call it, consider that person crazy, which is not a really good term to use, but you can consider it to be, you know, any of the symptoms of either bipolar or schizophrenia that you would see in people who are mentally ill. This is very different from that. So that's another aspect that we should have the awareness that the mind is pure energy. Also, once the mind does become pure energy, and once that really is our experience of the mind, and it almost is like you're losing your mind, right? And you can use that, but unfortunately, losing one's mind is associated with mental illness. So, but anyway, the mind does sort of dissolve. If it doesn't, we don't lose it. It just dissolves into consciousness. And then when that happens, the mind becomes very still. We haven't lost the mind. Even though the scriptures say the dissolution of the mind into pure consciousness is the death of the mind, we know that's different than losing one's mind. But when the mind does dissolve into pure energy, it becomes still. So it's the opposite of a mental illness where you would need medication to try to still one's mind. So it becomes still in the state of the mind's dissolution. And then what happens is once the mind becomes still, we find bliss that was lurking there, that was hidden by all of these thoughts, right? You find a natural bliss there, and that is the bliss that we always have. We've never lost it. We're coming in contact with something that we've always had, It's not something new, and this is a very important point in Vedantic philosophy. So we become aware of what we already have, and that's what this natural bliss is. It's just lurking just behind our thoughts, but the thoughts are so strong, the mind is so strong, that we can't really access the bliss that's lurking and the natural happiness behind our thoughts. Whereas remember, the self is already attained, right? The self is always there. We're just not aware of it. We're not aware that we're enlightened. We think of ourselves as miserable, poor, weak, all of these things. And by doing that, we become like that. We also have a problem with projecting that or seeing that in other people as poor, as weak. We should never think of anyone as, petty. And that's a big, big problem. Our ego is petty, but we don't have that recognition. We think the ego is like the self, and we get confused between the ego and the self. We think the ego is like God, but it's not. And if other people have big egos and are running around, then why should we think that that's right? That's not correct, but we shouldn't really be worried about what other people are doing too. If that's your profession and that's what you do, commenting on this stuff, fine. But for our spiritual practices, we really want to step aside and step away from all of that stuff. And I guess I'm talking about politics in that context. So we attain this natural bliss. And there's a very important Indian philosophy that says you can't attain Vishnu, which is a god, without becoming Vishnu. And the idea with that philosophy and that idea is that you have to first see yourself as consciousness. You first have to see yourself as God before you can attain enlightenment. And you could say, well, isn't that the attainment? But that's what that amazing point is. You have to first become Vishnu before attaining Vishnu, because there's two steps there. There's one step of recognizing, now we're all, if you're listening to me and you're with me on this podcast, you see yourself as divine, you see yourself as consciousness, but that's just halfway. Then you need to attain that same energy. You need to become and attain that same consciousness. So how we do that is we just continue our practice. We don't give it up because we've had one moment, we've seen the light. It's one thing to see the light. It's another thing to be the light and to attain the light, right? And that's what we really want. So if we've seen the bliss behind our thoughts, it's great. But now we really do need to attain the bliss. And the best way to start to do that is to be very grateful. So you should start with an idea of gratitude to what it is that you have in your life currently. You know, these things haven't really been given to you other than by a higher power, really. And we should see that as a reason for why we have whatever it is that we have. Even the food we eat, the whole point of saying grace and those things is to recognize that God has given us what we have. And that's the first step. And then the second step is to think about becoming enlightened and to recognize, excuse me, that, you know, we're not quite there yet, and to try to become, even though we're Vishnu, we still want to become Vishnu. So we still want to think of becoming enlightened. Once we, think about how great God is, we do want to think about becoming God. And that's something that we miss. That's that second step. So now we can recognize, hopefully, that the mind has taken the power, has donned the power of God in a sense. So the enlightened state is going to be where the mind as consciousness is now God, basically. And there's many statements from the East that say, worship the mind as God. The mind is a great deity. so that's where that comes from. And also we're able now to function where we weren't able to function before with our minds that were, all over the place. But we're now able to function with this mind that's, turned within. And then not only can we function, but we can also transmit spiritual energy. We can transmit Kundalini to others just by thinking, really, just by a thought. And that's, what we recognize as an attribute or characteristic of an enlightened being or a true guru or anyone who's able to transmit energy. And you don't have to be a guru to do it. You can just be a very devoted disciple of a guru, and you can also transmit energy, but you have to have it to give it, you know. So and we've talked about that before, you know, chanting is a really great way to increase the kundalini in yourself, and we should be chanting, also meditating, but those two things go together. And we should understand the true guru, and we should understand this philosophy of equality, and not just seeing, you know, energy in ourselves. We should see the same energy in everyone else too. And in that way, we can get over our antagonistic ideas, our hostile ideas of other people, and to see that because we're pure energy, everything has to be pure energy. And that's how we should see it. And that's kind of the goal. So with that, I will sign off and wish everyone the very best. This has been Josh Barzell for Modern World Zen.